Here we are on the first full day of our retreat, and we have such a profound theme to think about: contemplation and action. But my feeling is very strong that we can't really begin to think about it until we've also thought a little bit more together about what healing means, and particularly what self-healing means, and healing the illusion of separateness between ourselves and others. Of course, we are separate. At one level, we are very separate, and we need to know clearly where our boundaries are and where others' boundaries are, so that we will not transgress those boundaries, so that we will not trespass. Forgive us our trespasses, because we do trespass. However, beneath, beyond, in a way that I can't even give a kind of physical term to, we also belong inevitably to one another. And it is only our species, our human species, that has the gift of knowing, of perceiving, of experiencing through consciousness that we belong in a single family, in a single world, with some characteristics that are unique to each of us, and some even more vital characteristics that we utterly share. The simplest way I can say this is that when I benefit you, I benefit myself. When I harm you, I harm myself. How self-evident is that? And yet we live in a world in which this most fundamental knowledge, the fundamental philosophy, the fundamental knowledge of all the great teachings, call them religions, call them philosophies, call them whatever you like, is that our rising or falling depends on the extent to which we can respect ourselves and care for one another. This is the life we are all called not just to love, but called to know and discover life in. This doesn't mean that we're going to like everything and everybody. But if we move beyond the kind of primitive uncontemplated, non-contemplated thinking that lets us foster the delusion that my happiness can come at your expense, then we all drown in this misery. We drown in this misery. So our astonishing privilege, is to somehow heal within ourselves the tendencies that clearly we all have as a human family to divide one from another. We all have them. I have them. If anybody in this room doesn't have them, I would love to be blessed by you. But we all have these tendencies. But we also have other tendencies which is to divide ourselves from ourselves. So this is why our self-healing, this is why our self-healing is so important to us. Because until we can come into some place of integration with ourselves, including those parts of ourselves that we would rather others didn't know about, or that we ourselves would rather not know about, that we pretend only other people are doing them or thinking them or being them, yeah, until we can integrate our wholeness and love ourselves in all of our unfolding, we will inevitably separate ourselves from others. So this glorious task, in inverted commas, this glorious journey of discovery, of coming into a more loving relationship with others and the world and the very fact of life and of existence, is absolutely congruent with and dependent upon and interdependent with our growing in integrity and wholeness within ourselves. Richard Rohr talks about original sin. Richard Rohr is a Franciscan, and like St. Francis, he has a very, very simple, profound gospel of love for all creatures, human creatures and all creatures. And he talks about original sin as a separation from our divine source, or the source of being, or maybe for some of you it's a separation from your already perfect Buddha nature. Yeah? You are already there. Yeah? But I think it's also a separation from our own capacity to love freely. Because I'm a grandmother, I spend time with little children. And Paul, my husband, is a pediatrician, so he spends lots of times with little children that he sometimes sees often and sometimes sees rarely. So it's an incredible privilege for any of us who are able to spend time with little children, because we can see how natural it is for children to love, to be joyful. Of course they fall down, of course they have a tantrum, but they rise up again and they're willing to be loving. They're actually willing to be forgiving also. So this is very natural for us. And a lot of the behaviours that cause us such distress are arising from the conditioned mind. But of course the question is, why do they stick? Why do we take them so seriously? I'm not going to answer this question for you, by the way, because it's a question we need each of us to ask ourselves. Why do we, for example, allow in the privacy of our own minds sometimes to say the most outrageous things to ourselves that are strikingly unkind or strikingly deluded, protecting ourselves from knowing ourselves in our full beauty and power? Yeah. I want to leave that part there, because we're going to return to this theme of interbeing, our connection one with the other many, many times over these days. But I want to read you a little piece about kindness. And it's from the book that I wrote, which is called Everyday Kindness, which means not kindness for special occasions and not kindness because you think it might get you a nicer throne in heaven, and not kindness because you would like rebirth in a pleasant place rather than an unpleasant one, if that's your belief system, and not kindness because somebody else will give you a gold star, but kindness because you can. This is what freedom is. To live the qualities that we love to receive because we can. That's what freedom is. Because we can. And when we don't, because we can see that and we can do better. Yeah? Because, of course, in this path of integrity and wholeness, we will sometimes do completely ridiculous things. How else would we learn? So each of those moments is a gift to us, a teaching to us. It's like Rumi says, you know, let me bow down to every moment. But some of the things that we do that are particularly stupid, we might wish not to do them too many more times. So if we can actually acknowledge them and integrate what they've taught us, maybe they'll catch us less often. So I say, from the moment of our birth, we are dependent on the kindness of others. And to grow in confidence and self-trust, we are equally dependent on knowing that we are capable of offering kindness to others. In other words, our integrity, as well as our happiness, depends on our confidence that we can offer kindness to others. It's quite a long passage, but I'll just read you one more tiny bit of it. If we could pick up a telescope and look down the years of our lives, virtually every moment of our greatest happiness would reflect the giving and receiving of kindness. Can you think about that? The giving and receiving of kindness. And sometimes unexpectedly, sometimes in a form that you weren't exactly prepared for, sometimes without knowing how much you needed it until there it was, that thoughtfulness, that patience, that understanding, that respect, that smile, that touch, that look, that gesture, kindness. There is a balm in Gilead. It's kindness. We would also see that the moments of our greatest suffering were made tolerable only through connection, concern, and kindness. Sometimes we don't know that until we are vulnerable. So that's one of the teachings of vulnerability, when we are explicitly and unavoidably dependent upon others. Because in lots of the time we like to sort of tell ourselves how independent we are. But when we're vulnerable, vulnerability becomes our teacher. It tells us how much we, ourselves, and therefore all our human family, need kindness. And how do we learn this? We learn this through noticing the actions of kindness and through our momentary contemplation, recognition, awareness, consciousness. These are all acts of contemplation. Contemplation is itself an action. Yeah? Contemplation is itself an action. I used to teach and really feel that one was the yin and one was the yang, that one yielded to the other and one informed the other. But now I see yin and yang in contemplation, and I see yin and yang in action. And I see mindlessness in action, and I see mindlessness in some contemplation, and I see mindfulness in contemplation, and I see mindfulness in some actions, that we move in and out of consciousness as we grow it. Rilke uses a wonderful word which translates as unfolding. We are already there, and the glorious paradox of the human condition is that we are also unfolding our awareness of what it means to be already there. The very ground you stand on is holy. May I be the soul of this place. May I be the soul of this place. May we all be the souls of this place. But that kind of understanding, we glimpse and we retreat. We glimpse and we retreat. And that is the nature of our human existence. It is the nature of our human existence that we glimpse and retreat, but then we glimpse again and it goes deeper. And as it goes deeper, it more and more shapes and informs our actions until the actions increasingly reflect not just our efforts, but our effortlessnesses. I know there's no such word. Our effortlessness is our naturalness. The naturalness of our inclinations to be kind, the naturalness of our loving self, the naturalness of our inclusion of others. So, in a sense, what we are unfolding, what we are unfolding, and enfolding is simply our original nature. We are finding ways through contemplation and mindful action and through our falling down. Please, please don't disown those moments. And through the teachings that arise from our falling down, or the teachings that arise from our bitter criticism of others. Our self-righteousness also, all of those things, all feeding our growing awareness of I can live more lovingly. May I have the courage today to live the life that I do love. To postpone my dream no longer, but do at last what I came here for, and live with love more and more. Yeah? I'm just going to put a stop on the recording, and then I'll start again so you can take a moment.